We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month, the focus is on industrial automation. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, video, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, we will dive into the storm around Activision CEO Bobby Kotick with Jessica Condit at Engadget. So there's been a lot of stuff around Activision that we've been talking about throughout the year, but things have come to a head thanks to a Wall Street Journal report. We'll be diving all into that. As always, if you're enjoying the Engadget Podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher's choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's always super helpful. And drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We typically live stream the show Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. So stop by, join us for the chat. It's always a fun time. So once again, Activision Blizzard is in the news, and specifically, this is because the Wall Street Journal reported that CEO Bobby Kotick knew pretty much everything that was happening. He knew about the sexual misconduct allegations. He ignored them. He did not tell the board. This kind of relates to something we were talking about earlier this year, where the state of California basically went after Activision Blizzard for housing a very bad work environment where.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of bad things were happening, like sexual misconduct, a work environment that was not really well suited to women, especially. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to dive into all this, and joining us to kind of elucidate everything is Jess Condit, our senior editor who focuses on games and the gaming industry. Hello, Jess. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Happy to be Hello. Here. Sad to talk about Activision doing this stuff again.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We really have to dive into what's going wrong with this company at this point. But can you tell us who is Bobby Kotick and what is happening? Like, why is he in the news again specifically?
Bobby Kotick, the star of Moneyball. No, he was in that movie. That does not matter. Yeah. So Bobby Kotick has been CEO of Activision for 30 years, literally, 1991. So he's if there are any issues, if there are any strategies the company has employed, it's because of Kotick. So I think he gets to take the heat for all the mess that's happening as well. He's been the person at the top in charge of this company for 30 years. The system starts with him. And yeah, so the recent reports, on top of the state of California suing Activision for gender discrimination, employment discrimination for years. Now, this report from Wall Street Journal is basically laying out how much he knew in a few instances. So Bobby Kotick truly, in at least one instance, protected someone who was found to be sexually harassing women at Activision. And Bobby Kotick, instead of letting him be fired, Bobby Kotick actually protected him and kept him at the company. That's just one instance we know of. We also know Jen O'Neill, who recently stepped down as the co-head of Blizzard. She was the first female leader in Activision Blizzard's history since 1979. The first female leader. That tells you something right there. She just stepped down, and we found out that she had some concerns about the company addressing all of these issues of literally groping women in the office sometimes. Like, this is mm-hmm. some serious stuff.
And she said she had been sexually mm-hmm. harassed too. Like, it's yeah. There's that, and also the lack of equal pay with her, like, her co-lead, Mike Ibarra. So
absolutely.
It's a lot of awful things.
Right. So it's like, it's discrimination on every level. This company was not built to support anyone other than white dudes. Is how
Absolutely.
It seems, you know, and that starts from the top. That starts with Kotick. These calls. So there was actually a group of employees that walked out and called for Bobby Kotick's resignation. So that's big. But the biggest thing for me, like with all this stuff happening this week, is that there are outside, like third parties calling for Kotick's resignation as well. The shareholders, there's always this small group of shareholders that really don't like Kotick. They've been calling for him to be removed for a long time. So of course they're like, yeah, definitely. But there's also, I mean, Polygon, an enthusiast press, they had an editorial, a very powerful editorial, I thought, that was just Bobby Kotick must resign. I've never seen that personally.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you see like the New York Times do for presidents, right? You see it right. for major political leaders. And I think in the industry, Kotick is kind of on that level. Like he is head of one of the biggest game companies in the world. It's kind of wild. The other thing around this too, like after that report came out, I think there were employees like were publicly like speaking up against him as well. The board of directors said that they still remain confident in his leadership. So there's just like, there's a lot of mess going on here. And that board, by the way, like when you hear board of directors, you probably think of like this. It's a group of people who are just, you know, trying to keep a business going, right? They're the real bosses in charge and the CEO must answer to them. But hey, I'm looking at a breakdown from Luke Plunkett at Kotaku, and you know, the board includes a former Disney board member who was investigated by the SEC for nepotism, a private equity goon who drove a New York biscuit factory to strike and then called in scabs, an Olympics bid guy described by Deadspin in 2017 as a true rich asshole, and Bobby Kotick's on that board as well. Kotick, by the way, and one other person on the board are also in Jeffrey Epstein's black book. So, you know, just a lot of good stuff.
What a crew. Happening.
What a crew, like, leading this whole thing. It's kind of no wonder, yeah, that environment exists at Activision Blizzard. But go ahead, Jess. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. No, and, like, the board supporting him speaks to how he's been able to stay in power this long. Like, stay in power as if he's a dictator. But, like, he is very comfortable in this role, and he has been for 30 years. He has the support of the people that matter, the people that will keep him in his job. But like now we have Sony Interactive CEO Jim Ryan. He sent this email to employees saying it's not okay what Activision is doing. How they're handling this is absolutely abhorrent. And Sony is a huge partner of Activision. That's a big deal. So seeing calls like that from companies and from larger organizations on top of employees calling for this, that's different than it has been in the past. I still, with the board behind Kotick, with the system in place as it is, I do think it's an uphill battle to see him removed. And I personally think it's time. I think a lot of people agree that it's time, but I honestly don't have much hope that that's going to happen. I think he's going to be there for a while longer.
It's kind of wild. Like, I just want to bring up some other accusations that Shannon Lau from the Washington Post wrote up on Twitter, too. Like, she points out, Kotick was accused in 2006 of threatening his female assistant that he would have her killed. Okay.
Jeez.
Activision, I mean, it's one of those things of like a shitty boss basically saying like, yeah, I'm going to destroy you, I'm going to have you killed. And Activision in a statement said that Kotick apologized 16 years ago for the obviously hyperbolic and inappropriate voicemail.
Voicemail, yeah. So it's recorded.
That's
so
excusing.
We can, yeah. Oh my God. Of course.
It's obviously it. Hyperbole.
Oh, he's so dramatic, though. Oh, he's so emotional. Dramatic. See, that's No.
That's how it goes. He was sued in 2007 by a flight attendant on a private jet he partly owned who said the pilot sexually harassed her. Kotick fired her and told her and her lawyers that I'm going to destroy you. So, yeah, this is kind of who we're dealing with. And, you know, we talk a lot about the kind of the state of the gaming world, too. And like, I don't know. The idea of like how sexism is kind of almost ingrained in certain in gaming to a certain extent, and kind of how it's led to online responses to anything, a game featuring a woman as a main character or something, or, you know, women just saying, hey, I'd like to play video games. I guess to me, it seems like, hey, if these are the people in charge, it's kind of no wonder this is the culture that's kind of spun out from it. I don't know if you have deeper thoughts on that, Jess.
That's exactly. God, I even hate to say it still. Gamergate was a coalescence of all of these ideas. And like, this was a this Gamergate was women in the business trying to say, yo, this is happening.
Yep. Yeah.
It was in response to being attacked and being harassed and this heightened level of harassment online. But in the end, it was, yo, there's sexism in the industry. There's discrimination in the industry. There's also a racial component here that we have to talk about. But especially, like, I mean, seeing all the reports coming out of Activision is not a surprise, right? This is what we've been saying. This is happening. Women in the industry have experienced this firsthand. This isn't a lie. This is how the system works, and this is why there are mostly white dudes working at these companies, because a lot of other people don't feel comfortable in these environments, and they are pushed out in ways like this over and over again.
I have two things. One is sort of an observation from, like, having experienced similar desire of to call out bad actors in my own industry, and seeing the inaction of some people, like the fact that, like you were saying, the board of directors is enabling some people continue to work with Blizzard just because they're so powerful, I guess. And some people, I guess, feel at a loss. Some people feel they can't speak out. Some people don't want to, you know, ruffle feathers because they're afraid of retribution or that sort of thing. Like, for me, I know that, like, when I know for a fact that, like, a publication in our space is not good, I will not work with them any longer. And I make that very clear. I just be like, oh, sorry, I'm not talking to anyone from your site because y'all are a racist, screw up piece of crap. So, but, like, there are people I've spoken to that don't want to cut ties because yep. for some reason, you know, they feel it's mean. I don't know.
This happens in every industry, by the way. Like, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Either because it's still more worth it to you to keep working with known abusers or jerks.
Or
yeah.
you're scared to rock the boat, you're afraid of repercussions. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Jess, is do you feel like with all these developments lately, with all the attention on Blizzard, that there will be change, that something good might come out of it?
Yeah, I do. I like seeing companies like Sony and PlayStation, you know, stand up and say yeah. this is not okay. They're not the only studio to do so in the wake of these allegations at Activision. The conversation absolutely has to continue to happen. Mm-hmm. And this is mm-hmm. pushing that conversation into the spotlight. Mainstream news is covering this stuff. That's good for the industry. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that. I have hope. I mean, there is progress happening, right? It's getting mm-hmm. better and better. I truly see mm-hmm. that happening. We're not there yet, but it's getting better. And I think this can definitely be a catalyst for more progress. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the thing that fixes everything, of course.
Right.
And I still think Kotick is going to keep his job. I do.
Oh, man. I wanted to point out something quick, like just the sheer like gaslighting over the past week. Like there was just a lot of things happening. One thing we didn't mention from the Wall Street Journal report is that Bobby Kotick allegedly wrote that letter that I believe we talked about from Frances Townsend, who was then Activision Blizzard CCO, who it just sounded like a tone deaf response
torture
to
apologist.
Those initial. Yeah. Act and torture apologist. Like the letter, she said, in that letter, she said the initial allegations by the state of California painted a distorted and untrue picture of our company. Turns out, according to the Wall Street Journal, that he wrote that letter and kind of just attached her name to it. So also another, listen, she's not a great person, but attaching, you know, one of the few women in your leadership, attaching her name to this. And then later, Kotick apologized yep. for the tone-deaf response from the letter, his own letter.
Through her under
Through
the bus
her.
For something
yeah.
he wrote.
I just,
it's all, this is how the company runs. Like, we're seeing it play out. This is Activision. Yeah. And this is Kotick yeah. in leadership at Activision. This is how it works. And it's mm-hmm. not okay. So,
and
hey,
when,
at least we're seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like to implore, if any of you out there listening, watching, works for Activision, knows someone who works for Activision and wants to share any more information, we're here for you. You want a listening ear, we're here for you. Just like come talk to your friends.
Talk to your friends.
This is not normal. don't think that this is like hostile work environment is like a normal thing. You shouldn't feel like you're in a hostile work environment.
It is. And this is something like I think we've talked about before, and we should probably dive deeper into it. But I want to say, like, in that letter, in his response in July, and this happened way back in July, Kotick apologized for his own tone deaf letter, even though somebody else's name was attached to it. He said they're going to do something about it, right? They're going to offer employee support, listening sessions, personnel changes, hiring practices, in-game changes. Like, all these things, like, it is funny how people like him and, like, the people who enable him are like, oh, yeah, we are doing these things to make our environment better, right? Look at all these things we're doing. Even if they're, like, blatantly lying to you about, like, the root causes of a lot of it. So,
well, even this, like, zero tolerance policy that Activision has instituted. First of all, what was it before? And second, like, this doesn't apply to Kotick, obviously. The company has already written off any claims of harassment against him and said, oh, it was too long ago, you can't prove it. And it's like, okay, so that's not, you say this policy exists, but it clearly doesn't. And that's honestly exactly what I expected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jess, like, you've been following the story for a while too. Like, has anything before this Kotick story dropped, like, what else was happening over at Activision Blizzard, right? Like, I remember they changed the name of a character in Overwatch because one of the people mentioned among all the documents was it McCree? McCree in Overwatch, his name was changed because that name comes from somebody who had allegations against him as well. Anything else you want to note here?
Yeah, there have been a few heads that have rolled at Activision Blizzard. But again, no one who's protected by the board, of course. No, this can be a reckoning moment for the industry. Activision is truly, I mean, it doesn't get bigger than Activision. Right? Activision Blizzard. This is the billion-dollar company. This is what they do. They drive a lot of the market. Call of Duty alone, let alone Overwatch, Diablo, World of Warcraft. I mean, it just, the list goes on. Big names, they are not going to stop making money. But I do think next year will be a good test for how loyal people feel. Because Call of Duty this year got a pretty tepid response overall, I would say. And that series, I think, has been in need of innovation for a while. I think a lot of people, or attention, just like actual attention in a different way. So, I mean, maybe next year Call of Duty sales will drop. That would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it? Or maybe by next year, this time, we'll totally have forgotten about this and, you know, I'll be playing Overwatch 2. No, because it's never coming out.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder.
Employees at Activision Blizzard have also said, like, I think a very vocal group are like, hey, we are not responsible, you know, for the issues at this company. So if you start boycotting our games, basically, at the same time, you could also be hurting people who are genuinely trying to make good games. This is a weird balance that we're in right now. I don't know, like... Yeah, I guess everyone's going to make their own personal choices. I don't know if, like, consumer sentiment is really going to shift things for a company this big, you know? It's like mosquitoes trying to attack an elephant. Sure, maybe it'll feel it once in a while, but it's going to keep moving. It seems like the government response is really that, like, the thing. And the response from the other elephants, you know, all the other big game companies kind of have to come together to push them forward and push this industry forward. So we will be paying attention to all of this. But I just wanted to say thank you so much, Jess, for coming here and breaking it down with us. Where can we find you on the internet these days?
Oh, Instagram is a good spot. Jess L. Condit.
Good pictures. And, good pics. Yeah.
Twitter.
Good.
Jess Condit. Yeah. Thank you. Dog pics. You know, dog pics. Food.
Food pics. I love those.
Love it. Thank you so much, Jess. Let's move on to some other news and some big news around repair today, specifically repair, you know, do-it-yourself repair. Apple announced a self-service program that'll let you repair iMacs and iPhones, which I think has been a long time coming. This basically, it almost seems like it came out of nowhere, but it was clearly a response to a lot of pushes from the government, and some states were starting to require, you know, self-repair for many companies. So it seems like Apple went ahead of any rules that would be pushed by the FTC and and other agencies. But it's cool. Basic concept is that you'll be able to next year, you'll be able to order parts for your devices and do these repairs yourself. And they're going to be starting out with simple things like, I believe, just like the battery and the
battery,
screen.
Camera, mm-hmm. and display. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Not
and
like
then
not
other
like
parts will be coming later.
Not like super deep stuff immediately, but hey, this would be kind of interesting. Like, Sherlyn, would you feel comfortable jumping into your phone and pulling out the battery and doing all the fun stuff?
I mean, the way they're currently built, I'm not sure. I'm like, for me, it'll be like better if there were obvious screws. I'm just like, all right, I'll just unscrew this, but obviously not. So, but they do say, right, that like Apple does say it will require you to review a repair manual before you order the relevant parts. And then they haven't said how much they will cost yet, but you can return some of these parts for recycling, which is pretty nice. And I do appreciate the effort there on sustainability. My, the more interesting thing to me in terms of what happened here this week is like Apple's approach and what kind of was the final, something that broke the camel's back. The straw that broke the camel's back?
I mean,
whatever it was that caused them to finally give in.
There's a lot of right to repair talk happening all around. And Apple, too, is being like...
not just in phones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think like being... maybe this is a way for them to do like one of the market leader things. Like, hey, we're not the Apple we were like 10 years ago. Maybe we can open up a little more, let people deal with this stuff. It goes towards sustainability because it means people could use their devices a little longer. It's good PR because it's kind of what consumers are starting to demand right now too. So yeah, there's a lot going on here.
I mean, I miss the days when you could just swap out a battery cell. I remember those days.
Sure.
I'm one of those babies.
Yeah.
And they just kept going away and they've, you can hardly ever find a phone now with a replaceable, like a battery cell that you can just pop out and replace at any time. Mm-hmm. Not that this is meant to do that, right? Like this isn't the same scenario where you can, like, when your battery's out of juice and you're out and about without a charger, you can just swap in a new hot battery pack. But it's like reminiscent of those days for me.
For sure. It's sort of like if you've tried to keep your phone for longer than 2 years, I feel like 2 years is the breaking point for a lot of batteries where it starts to be like bad. You just don't want to live with that. It just doesn't last you the whole day, or you have to keep recharging it or something. So I think it was like the iPhone 4S or something. Like I was able to get it replaced, the battery replaced, about 2 years in, and it felt like a brand new phone. It felt like, I was able to just keep using that for another year or so. So it just, it breathed a lot of new life into my device, and I really appreciated that at the time. So it'll be interesting to see like how this affects things, how consumers will take advantage of it, maybe how actual like small repair stores will deal with it too, because I think it sounds like it's the user has to request this. It sounds like the actual consumer has to request the part. It's not going to be through like a mom and pop store or something.
Yeah.
But maybe you could bring it to a repair store if you need some help, and then, let a local tradesman do it. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Hopefully, that won't put them completely out of, business. But the other thing, too, I want to clarify and make sure if you're listening and you're getting excited about fixing your old iPhone, your aging iPhone 8 or whatever it is, for now, this thing will be available. This service will be available in the U.S. early next year. And then for the other countries, you're looking at later 2022. And then at the start, it will be only iPhone 12s and iPhone 13s are eligible.
And M1 base
and
Max.
M1 Max will be soon after. So fairly new devices for now at the start. So if you're still on an iPhone 8 and you were like, I like it, I don't want to give it up. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to, maybe I just need a battery replacement. I don't know how long you're going to have to wait for Apple to offer a repair kit for that.
I would not. That's the point where you go to the local shop that has iPhone battery, repair taped onto the windows, and you ask them to please do this without killing your phone. So good luck with that, everybody. Yeah. So this is a good move. And hopefully we'll see more companies kind of following this, because I think it's really important that we be able to fix our stuff. It's a big deal. Speaking of broken things, you know, and things that consumers didn't fully have control of. Typically, we think of the cloud as this thing where, like, I don't have the hardware. You know, I can't fix it if something goes wrong. But that ended up being a bad thing for Google, right? Because Google Cloud had an outage, and that ended up breaking several major services like Spotify, Snapchat, Etsy, and more. What happened, Sherlyn?
So I think this was Tuesday, I believe, where for me, let's let the personal version of this story.
Were you trying to do?
I was on Spotify trying to listen to the newest, Twice album or something.
Oh my God.
And you know, I was streaming it to my speakers, and streaming Spotify to my speakers is kind of an ordeal. Doesn't always stay synced. It doesn't always stay linked, whatever. Anyway, so then stuff stopped playing out of nowhere, or it just wouldn't skip to the next track or whatever. And I was just like, what the hell is happening again? I almost did the thing where you whack your speaker to get it to work. It turns out, and then I did the thing where, you go into your Slack group and you're like, hey, is Spotify down for anyone else? Or you go to the Google. Down detector, exactly. And obviously then I found out that, Spotify wasn't the only one. It was Snapchat, Etsy, Discord, and more, including Pokemon Go, Apex Legends. So basically, fun stuff, right? It's pretty nefarious. I feel like somewhere out there was a big boss that was like, I don't want people playing during work hours. I'm gonna shut down. I'm gonna take down the Google Cloud server that targets all these fun things. And so anyway, we found out later on, we were like, okay, all these services are down. We don't know what the common factor is yet. It turns out they were all Google Cloud, users, those companies. And it was a networking issue that took down a lot of those services. And what struck me as potentially nefarious is that Google's own services weren't down. So obviously they posted their own things on a separate server that they don't sell out.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. That they don't share the same space as their customers, which is fine. It's just I guess Spotify is down. I guess I have to use YouTube Music. I guess this
it's a shame, Google says. Yeah.
I'm not I obviously don't think it's actually that nefarious, but there you go. You know, this was just a fun thing that happened this week. I mean, by fun, I mean it's fun, sad that all the fun things were
major issues. I mean, it is funny, every time a major cloud outage happens, I do wonder, how is this happening? Because we're supposed to have, severe, incredible redundancy. If one server farm goes down, another one's supposed to take up. There's supposed to be so many things to prevent this from happening. Yeah. I would love to see that happening more, I guess. But what's up?
Yeah. It happened for hours. It lasted for hours, right? Yeah. It wasn't fixed within a matter of minutes. It was a significant chunk of the day. One thing that some of us in Slack were discussing was that maybe because Google had so many embargoes lifting that day that it broke its own server.
It broke its own,
because, Jesus, Lord, there was a bunch of Google's news on Tuesday morning as well. We had a slew of updates from Google Maps. You can now see, area busyness directly from the app. Itself, get store directories and whatnot. Google News released some news about released a new tool about census mapping for journalists, and then some social media literacy information that it'll surface on news results as well. So all of that stuff is up on Engadget.com. You can check out our site for the details. And then also around the same time, I got an update on Stadia. Actually, the next day, Devendra, on our pre-production call, you remember me screaming, Stadia has Jackbox now? That was part of the...
Literally every gaming platform in the world has Jackbox. Your phone has Jackbox. Switch has Jackbox.
I mean, good job, Jackbox, for making the most, right?
Oh my God. There needs to be a whole new genre of games, just basic games for Sherlyn.
Don't you love, I love Jackbox.
It's fun.
It's
fun with friends, especially people who don't play games a lot, It's kind of a good way.
I can't wait to get back together with my friends and play some of these games.
For sure. Love Jackbox and don't love cloud outages. At least this isn't another AWS Amazon outage, which tends to happen a lot. The thing we don't hear too much about is like Azure, which is Microsoft's cloud, which I know a lot of businesses rely on. And their cloud business, I write up their earnings a lot, so I have noticed their cloud business is growing really quickly and is very strong. I do wonder, like, this is something all these companies will have to face, but it seems like Microsoft's cloud is kind of doing a little better than everybody else's, or maybe it's just not as widely used. I don't know what's up there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe by enterprises that don't touch or you know, that consumers don't interact with so much, maybe.
For sure. For sure. Let's move on to another piece of news and something I found really cool. I know you care a lot about accessibility news, Sherlyn. So I wrote up this thing about TD Pilot, which is a new product from Toby Dynavox. And there's a lot to drill down here. So Toby, T-O-B-I-I, is the company that's developed like eye tracking software. We've written them up when it comes to like, you know, eye tracking in VR headsets. Their tech is in gaming laptops too. It's really cool stuff. So Toby Dynavox is their assistive tech division, and they use that same technology to help people, you know, people with disabilities who perhaps can't use their hands, so they can control devices just with eye movements. TD Pilot is their first device that brings kind of the full power of their eye tracking to the iPad. And I think that's pretty cool. So you'll be able to, people will be able to mount iPads to their wheelchairs or just prop them up wherever. The eye tracking is strong enough to work in direct daylight, so very bright scenes, and it gives people full control of their iPad, so they could do anything. Like, they can explore all the apps, they can talk to other people around them. There's like a display on the back of this thing. This thing basically looks like a giant iPad case, that display in the back kind of will spell out what somebody is trying to say. They're also big speakers, so they can speak through this as well. Toby has had devices like this that just run Windows, Windows slates. So as powerful and as limited as Windows on tablets can be, you know, that's what people have had to live with. I think this is a really cool push into getting, you know, the hottest tech that people actually, that a lot of people are actually using, into the hands of people with disabilities as well. Right now, this thing is built to fit an iPad Pro 12.9-inch. You could do everything. You could play some games. The CEO of Toby told me everything but like really, really fast-paced games should be fine. So like, this is really good eye tracking. This is really useful tech. And I'm glad to see like this stuff is getting out there. I know you followed a lot of assistive tech, Sherlyn. Like, does this seem like a good development to you in this overall space?
I think one of the things that this will depend on is also how like Apple built in is like switch control stuff or like its, you know, readout, its screen reader technology too. Yeah. And in the past, you rightly pointed out that Windows tablets have just been more dominant in this field of like eye tracking devices. And I think partly because, I mean, I don't know why OEMs choose to make more solutions Microsoft, but also Microsoft. Because
more people have Windows. I asked them
from so long ago.
What's up here? So Toby, on PCs, right, they make their own drivers. They make their own software to make this work. They never found it useful on Macs because it's like Macs are so expensive. It's such a small marketplace. It just never made sense to do that. Whereas iPads are a little cheaper, although the iPad Pro is pretty expensive. I think it's more this platform is easy to get into. And Apple specifically built a hook into iOS 15 or iPadOS 15 for screen readers and for eye tracking. And they worked with Toby to do that. So that is a lot better than Toby doing all the work themselves, you know, what that they have to do on Windows.
Oh, they definitely have to work with Apple. And isn't Apple's generally been a big supporter of assistive tools like that. But the other thing I'll point out is that like this, like a lot of other things in accessibility and assistive tech, very expensive, right? The whole kit, according to your article, is $10,000. Yeah, $10,000. I mean,
would technically not see that price. It's sort of like any medication or any treatment in the U.S. where the full cost of it is kind of hidden to the actual consumer. But you would need insurance.
Also, according to your article, too, like there's about 400 insurance contracts already that Toby has garnered. So that's good. It's good to hear, right? Obviously, that there will be more support and more devices. I also would like to see how this does with speech recognition. because you mm-hmm. mentioned, right, it has speakers. I'm not sure if it offers voice recognition for commands as well.
It's really not that I've seen.
It's just for the eye tracking.
This is mainly around the eye tracking, and mainly for people who have trouble using like an iPad with fingers and which touch screens. That's really what they're aiming for here. Mm-hmm. But I think the key is that it can also help people who can't normally speak without the assistance of a device. It kind of helps them get that out there too. I have seen some complaints, about Toby's software. A lot mm-hmm. of people, who have to use these things complain that their software is a little dated. There is another mm-hmm. device called the Skyle, which kind of uses, mm-hmm. and I think you've been researching this, Sherlyn, this other product uses the assistive touch feature. So
yes,
it's sort of like
I
mouse support.
With that, yes.
Yeah, the mouse support in iPadOS to like emulate eye tracking. And I included one review from a YouTuber who says like that actually worked really well for them too. So there are a lot of ways to approach this. Good to see competition in this market because Toby Dynavox is like the leader. They're the Apple of the whole assistive tech industry at this point.
Right.
Yeah, and eye tracking. So I want to see competition, but it's really nice to see like them at least pushing something like this out.
Yeah, it's a good development. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in future, we'll see more devices that can help people with like cross-section or like double disability type things, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. like you're not just, have physical motor disabilities. You also have like speech impediments mm-hmm. or you all are also blind, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. So we'll see. And I think we're getting there. I think we're seeing steps towards that, which is mm-hmm. great.
Yep. Very cool. Let's move on to some other stories. Just some quick things to shout out now. This week, Microsoft surprisingly just dropped Halo Infinite's free multiplayer mode. It is out in beta. They did this basically as part of the Xbox 20th anniversary event, which was also the Halo 20th anniversary event. I think there were rumors that this was going to happen, but nobody really expected it to drop so quickly. So, hey. If you've got a PC, if you've got an Xbox, you can jump in and get that going. It is free to play. There are things for you to download. Like many other multiplayer games right now, you could play it for free. But if you want like cool armor or like other special things like level upgrades and whatnot, you have to pay a little more for it. I've already paid $10 just for a cool like white and red. Right where it's a red, white, and blue armor, but it almost looks like a Voltron type coloring. My super soldier looks a little like Voltron. The full campaign is dropping on December 8th. And expect to hear more details about that soon. There's a lot to look forward to. I've talked about this before, though. I think the multiplayer is really good. It feels really tight. It is fun to play. It reminds me of like the heyday of Halo 3. So it is just really, it's actually just like, yeah, really, really good. Another piece of news, too, that I think is more of a bummer for a lot of people. Out of nowhere, Paramount Plus, or I guess CBS, Viacom CBS, announced that they're removing Star Trek Discovery from Netflix. And if you didn't realize it was on Netflix, it's because you live in the U.S. But outside of the U.S., this is where most of the world saw Star Trek Discovery. New episodes were dropping there. The entire series was available there. All of a sudden, this week, Viacom CBS announced they'd be pulling it from Netflix ahead of the new season launching very soon. New season's launching on November 18th, so that's today as we're recording this. And we don't know when the rest of the world is going to get access to this show because it's not going to be legally available to stream anywhere. Viacom CBS says that they plan to bring Paramount Plus, which is how people in the U.S. watch Star Trek. They want to bring it to other countries, but that's not going to happen until next year. So this just seems like a weird, very weird situation where they kind of just pulled the rug out from under fans who were really looking forward to this new thing. This deal, by the way, was really lucrative for Viacom because I think the story goes that Netflix paid them so much money that they basically were funding Star Trek Discovery. And that's why that show has such a high budget and just looks so crazy cool and expensive. So, yeah. Not great. I'm not sure what's going to happen with like Star Trek for the rest of the world.
Sorry, Trekkies. Yeah.
It's a shame.
I mean, Trekkies outside of the U.S. This whole like international rights thing still remains a mess.
It's a mess. Yeah.
it's not only this one show. There's a lot of things, right? It also affects things like when we're share playing on iOS 15, even Apple TV's own titles like Ted Lasso or what was that JGL show? Anyway, I was testing it out during my time off with Matt Smith, who wrote up our review of iOS 15. We still had geographical issues a way. Like it would, would say this. Like Matt would try to play Ted Lasso over Apple TV on SharePlay for both of us, and just because we're in different countries, even though both countries have access to the same show, we couldn't do it. It just goes, oh, this is not available outside your region or something. Huh. And I was like, that seems silly. Something worth talking to Apple about, but they won't. They still haven't got like a straight answer for me. All these international streaming rights issues, definitely something that we need to like get people to figure out. I can't figure it out, but we'll get people to figure it out.
It could just be because Apple TV Plus is such a new thing for Apple that they have not figured out this stuff. But yeah, we've talked about this before. Netflix is kind of the world's first like global TV network, right? If you have your Netflix account, you go to another country, you can still view all the Netflix content, and you'll also get some new stuff, like some new movies and shows that are in that territory that aren't at your home. But the ability to be able to, like, when we go to Taiwan for Computex, I could still keep watching my Netflix shows. There's no like interruption service. It's all just accessible. That's never really been done before. So if Netflix were ever to do like a share watching service through their app or something, like, it should be more seamless. Hopefully, like at least all their stuff hits all territories at the same time. But anyway,
I can't wait. I mean, don't give them ideas, but in this case, give them that idea. Like, I want Netflix to do a watch together or share play. Well, there is sort of that. Anyway,
share play should be the thing that they run through. But I wish there was an open thing for that too.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Lots of little bits of news today. One thing we also want to mention is Streamlabs. If you are a streamer, you have a streamer in your life, you've probably heard of Streamlabs OBS. But if you're a casual, you know, if you're casually in this market, you've also probably heard of OBS, which is this like open source, open broadcasting software. That's what OBS stands for. Those two projects have nothing to do with each other. So there's been a lot of complaints against Streamlabs recently. They are a company that, you know, has some very famous customers like Pokimane and Hasanabe. Streamlabs offers software that's very similar to OBS, so it helps streamers, you know, control their video feeds, add overlays, things like that. But before Streamlabs, you know, launched their product, they had asked the folks at OBS, according to OBS's Twitter account, if they could actually use the name OBS in their product name. And OBS was like, nah, like, no, don't do that. And Streamlabs didn't anyway. They kept going with it. They did not communicate with the OBS folks. Streamlabs is essentially a fork of OBS. But by calling it Streamlabs OBS, I think it's really confusing. I know, like, when I started looking at the software, I was like, why? One OBS looks really nice and shiny and well-designed, and that's the Streamlabs one, really. And one just seems like it's really archaic, but that archaic one is it's the OG. You know, it's the original, the one that actually deserves the name. Streamlabs has also been like accused of other, like basically plagiarizing in other respects. Let me see here. The company Lightstream, which also offers streaming software, tweeted that Streamlabs' website basically lifted overall design and copy language straight from Lightstream. So they're.
Damn.
Streamlabs is just like out there copying things. It's really iffy, which is a shame because I know a lot of people like their software. Like, they say it's well designed. They say it has cool features. It is weird that you would have to go through the route of just copying from competitors. Just not great. They gave kind of an empty statement saying first of all, they say they are announcing that they're removing OBS from the software's name, but they also say Streamlabs OBS is built on top of the OBS open source platform. Streamlabs is also open source, and our code is publicly available. Yet they say we take responsibility for our actions and we'll support the community. That reads a lot of like BS to me. Like, just being open source, does not mean you could just straight up lift names or go against the wishes of founders of another project. So, you know, I guess we'll see where this goes. But Streamlabs is very popular, and I think it'll be really interesting to see like what the outcome of this is. So that's, you know, that's annoying news. you know, for a company acting like garbage. But we can also talk about our politicians acting a little like garbage, too. So if you've seen the news this week, you've probably heard the stories around Representative Paul Gosar, a Republican from Arizona, who retweeted an anime video, an Attack on Titan opening with like AOC in there, basically showing him killing AOC, showing hordes of immigrants coming to our borders. Just like the most like some truly vile stuff. He ended up being censured over earlier this week after AOC and a lot of Democrats just called foul on this. There was a vote on basically him keeping his powers, basically. And after he was censured, immediately after almost, he retweeted that video, even though he said he was going to delete it. So just not great.
Not learning anything, not really, you know, agreeing with the censuring. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I think it was Gizmodo who probably had the best headline for this. It was like, anime, you know, has directly affected U.S. Congress or U.S. law at this point, or yeah, has gotten a lawmaker in trouble because it is really anime. And hey, we could talk about Attack on Titan and like the core philosophy of what that show means. There's a lot of weird stuff going on in Attack on Titan. Not a fan. So hey, just pointing this out. This is weird. We are in a time where old politicians will end up retweeting an anime meme and get in trouble for it. So, yeah, let's clean our palates. There was also a story going around this week about LA's iconic Staples Center, which I never understood why it was called the Staples Center, is going to become the Crypto.com Arena. That's the new name, Crypto.com.
I can't. I just can't.
Is that worse than the Staples Center?
I think. Look, at the point, by the time that I got to know the Staples Center, and yes, they're both branding, right? They're both like big merchant names, whatever. But like Staples is at least sort of
they sell staplers.
okay. But what I'm saying is Staples is like a one word name, right? A one word noun almost, even if it's a plural noun. The thing is, crypto.com has .com in it. We got .com.
How are you gonna know? That's the brand. The brand is crypto.com.
I can't. I know. I get it. But like, it would be one thing if it were Crypto Arena. But then, like, I know that crypto is also like a genre, a catch all. Like, it's not even.
They don't have the crypto trademark. They have crypto.com as a trademark. It is
Ethereum Arena. Yeah. I don't know.
It is certainly some like Idiocracy type mess happening here. I don't know. I have nothing else to say about this other than the name's really dumb. But so is the Staples Center, because I used to work for a rival office supply company. Oh, so it's like, I mean, I also hate Staples.
Yes, I get it. I will also say this. This is also to me like a sign of the times, right? Because like for me, look, I have made very publicly known that I am very, very tired of NFTs. And crypto, I know, is not the same as NFTs.
Did you mean you missed the ape party that was happening in New York, Sherlyn? Like, they had a whole thing. You weren't invited? I thought you did all the cool parties.
Which ape party are we talking about now? Because there's too many parties I get invited to.
The stupid NFT apes. The one that took over. It was the hottest club in New York over the weekend, Trillin. Yeah.
Oh, no. No, I did not, because screw NFTs. And I mean, look, we've talked at length, ad nauseum here on the show about NFTs. So I'm good. I'm just like crypto.com arena now. Like, we really got to put that in people's faces. You can't avoid the Bitcoin. Anyway,
it's taken over the world. I mean, listen, go read, folks, go read. There's been some good coverage over the NFT, NFT NYC event that was happening, but also the Bored Ape Yacht Club held like their first, in-person event. And there's good coverage around that. I think I read something on Inverse, so go check that out. Mm. If you really want to have your brain broken, of just like how far this entire, four random nobodies created this thing that is now like valued worth billions of dollars. It's all bad. You know what's not bad, Sherlyn? Something I think you would really like, a $10,000 Xbox.
I love it. I kind of freaking love it. If not because it's $10,000, but because it's Gucci. It's a Gucci Xbox.
I mean,
okay?
all the Gucci is bad. I'm getting ready to see the House of Gucci movie, by the way, the new Ridley Scott one, which that's the only Gucci I care about. But why?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah, why at $10,000? Is it just because of the bag?
Because Gucci.
Because of the branding?
Yeah.
Is
have
this
you,
worse?
Have you even, yeah. Have you even looked at any luxury thing lately? Like, if they're not $10,000, just like, don't talk to me.
It's so dumb.
It's like, this is, there's $25,000 purses. I can't even, I almost swore right there.
You know,
sorry,
but compared to like a specific Bored Ape, this is probably a deal. It's just $10,000 for this bag,
right?
And you can probably actually get one. Gucci is only going to sell 100 hand number units through its flagship stores starting November 17th. So, hurry
yesterday
for the holidays.
Okay. Seems pretty typical for luxury brands to do these like limited edition drops of their products. But in this case, I can't tell if it's in the image only or on the actual Gucci monogrammed what looks like a suitcase style bag here, but it's got lime green, like Xbox green letters on it that say Xbox.
It says Xbox.
It's ugly as all hell. I don't even know if it's actually on the purse or if
the controllers it's just also have like a red and blue stripe too. That's kind of hot.
Right.
Listen, it's $10,000. Nice. You get a custom designed Xbox that also has the Gucci like print, whatever you call that, and that you get two control. You get two controllers, Sherlyn.
Wow.
$10,000.
Oh my gosh. Maybe this is the Xbox I ought to get. You know,
this
like,
is totally the one.
Is it an Xbox S or X or like what is
this
it
is
like?
Definitely a, this is a Series X. They're not. Oh my God.
Right? Yeah.
It would be a shame if it was just a Series S. But it's funny because I think in a normal world, I talk about this being like, oh man, this is the end of civilization. This is capitalism running amok. But we just ended up like we moved on from talking about NFTs and Bored Ape Yacht Club. And that stuff is just brain breaking in terms of like the amount of money being flown around. So you know what? You know what? Give me more Gucci products.
Yeah.
Give me less NFTs. Like giving us like really crazy dollar amounts in the world. Yeah.
I mean, and speaking of that price and speaking of like crazy things, right? It's not even Declan Flynn in our chat rightly points out on our YouTube live stream that they're surprised that regular consoles aren't even going for $10,000 for the holidays because of this global chip shortage.
I mean, listen, if you try to get a PlayStation 5 now, you will be paying 2 to 3 times the cost. Don't worry if you really want to.
Yeah. So you don't have to splash $10,000 on a Gucci branded Xbox. That, you know, you might already be spending thousands on a regular Xbox if you can't wait for like supply to be in stock, that sort of thing.
I feel like these things they exist for like influencers and celebrities, right? So Kanye buys a thing, and whenever you see a photo of like Kanye's entertainment center or whatever, or his theater room, you will see the Gucci Xbox. You know, it's all about
swag. It's the people who have the Gucci wallpaper and the Gucci TV console and the Gucci. So like it blends in, you know, the monogram just kind of like camouflages and it's like, oh, it disappears. But obviously this is for the people who have too much money and they don't know what to spend it on at this point, right? Like what else? That's why luxury brands exist.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's the main reason, right? Because billionaires need to go to space and people need to spend money on things. So there you go.
TLDR, end of the episode. What have you been working on, Sherlyn? Because I've been talking for a while. So you're working on a big review, right?
Yeah, I am reviewing Android 12 at the moment, which is a weirdly complicated task. And as of right now, my review opens with the fact that this is a complicated task because we're not reviewing Android LS. It is Android 12 as it is on a Pixel only, like the Pixel 6 Pro, even though that is very similar to what other phones will get because there are Pixel exclusive features and I've already covered them in depth on my Pixel 6 review. We're looking at the Android 12 that will come out to all other Android phones. The problem is that like every phone out there has its own like maker skin, right? So you've got this week, I believe, Samsung announced One UI 4 is out. And One UI 4 is basically Android 12 for Galaxy S21, Galaxy Z, and other Galaxy devices soon. And, you know, Samsung won't provide you that material you customization in the same way that Google does, in the sense that it won't automatically generate the pictures, the colors from your wallpaper. It'll just offer you a whole host of color palettes. So basically what I'm saying is that Android is difficult to review because there's so many different versions of it, right?
Yeah.
And I can't give you like the in-depth kind of review that I might usually want to give someone on something like that. So it's more like, oh, here's all the things that will be hitting all Android, which are a few things, maybe just a handful of things. So anyway, working on that. And also like the Vindra, I'm working on end of year stuff and I, you know, am rounding up. So, hey, I am looking at some developments in accessibility in tech. Yay. Over the last year. If you're listening or watching and you have, you know, and a development you want to flag for me, please send it to either me on Twitter at Sherlyn Lo, or, you know, you can always hit up at podcast@engadget.com because I read those too. And then I'm going to enjoy my holidays.
Please. How about you, Dev? Yeah, I'm juggling a bunch of stuff right now, including previews for things I cannot talk about. Still going to be, I plan to write up something about the Amazon Glow, the kid thing, the kid projector touchscreen thing. And I'll also be working on some end of year stories. A bunch of ideas I'm working around.
Yeah.
Especially around the global chip shortage and kind of what that means for us going forward, especially as the US is like locking off certain deals between I think I saw the news around like Hynix, SK Hynix, and China. And US was like, no, you cannot advance your factories in China because we are basically in a trade war right now. So what will this mean for us in the next couple of years? I think that'll be a fun piece to really dive into. But before we get there, you know, we've got a lot of pop culture to talk about. So why don't you hit us up first, Sherlyn? Like, tell us what are your surprise suggestions this week?
These are very surprise suggestions that the Vindra will likely hate.
It's fine. I'm ready.
But there, I watched a lot of stuff this week. This is not a pick. I've been just catching up on Veronica Mars, just good. To understand what people my age grew up with in the U.S., I guess.
Veronica Mars is very good. Yeah.
It is great. Mm-hmm. I've been hooked. But this weekend, just to kind of like numb my brain a little bit from all that Mars investigation thinking, I watched Red Notice. The new Dwayne Johnson, Gal Gadot, and Ryan Johnson flick.
No, I Ryan liked Reynolds. It. Ryan I Reynolds. Know it's, How dare you? I Ryan know. Johnson's I the good it. One.
I said, did I say Ryan Johnson? You said I said Ryan Johnson. Reynolds, I hope.
It's okay. I always have Ryan Johnson on my mind, too. But yeah.
Who's Ryan Johnson? Anyway,
the director of The Last Jedi and all the great movies.
R-I-A-N. Anyhow, if I said Ryan Johnson, it was probably a portmanteau of like Ryan Reynolds and Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne Johnson and Ryan Reynolds. Uh-huh. Anyhow, the show is a fun action flick. It's a heist movie, basically. And it's kind of predictable in terms of like what the plot twist is. I saw it coming since the first third of the movie, but I just like these three actors. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's mind-numbing. So if you want to like an action movie, you can just...
I think that's why they made this movie. It was like...
Exactly.
I want something mind-numbing. I like hanging out with these guys. Like, yeah.
Exactly. All three of them are pretty fun. So that's what I watched it for. And then the other pick for you guys. Also... like even more mind-numbing and normally I wouldn't have watched something like this, but I was like, you know what, I'll give it a shot because for one specific reason, but I'll tell you what the title is first. I'm talking about Love Hard, this Netflix movie. It stars Jimmy O Yang, Nina Dobrev. It's
love
a rom-com. Jimmy O Yang's great. I watched it because I know it's like Asian, like representative of Asian American cultures, and in the holiday season, it's pretty rare to get what's essentially a Hallmark movie, but like starring an Asian character. You know what I mean? The premise is that Nina Dobrev's character thinks she swiped right and matched with this really cute Asian American guy called Tag, but actually it was Jimmy O Yang pretending to be this hot guy. So she got catfished. It's kind of like Catfish, the holiday special, but Asians. Now look, the reason I am recommending it, it's pretty predictable, expected, almost cringeworthy at parts, but oh my gosh, Harry Shum Jr. is in it, and he's amazing. Okay. Like Harry Shum Jr. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love him so much. He's in this. He's great. It's like 45 minutes of looking at Harry Shum. That's it. That's all I got from this movie. Love Heart. You know, not for everyone on our podcast, I think. But if, you know, you feel like something for the holidays, this could be a good one. And also, Harry Shum. Hey, there you go. Devendra, give us the classy picks.
I mean, I don't know if it's classier, so there's that. But I have been checking out Netflix's adaptation of Cowboy Bebop, and I just have to have say. Yeah, right. It is. The show's kind of a mess. I love Cowboy Bebop. I love the anime. It is something I've seen dozens of times. Like, I rewatch Cowboy Bebop almost several times a year at this point. I listen mm-hmm. to the music every day. Like, it is in my DNA. So this show can never be that. You know, it is a mm-hmm. live action adaptation of one of the best anime series ever made. And I think it makes a lot of mistakes. I think production wise, it looks weirdly cheap. You know, Cowboy Bebop, the core of it, it's about a group of like ragtag bounty hunters in a future where, you know, there is fast space travel within our solar system. People aren't like leaving the solar system, but the Earth has been destroyed. Humanity is kind of spread throughout and is trying to like make planets habitable. And it's really just about the adventures these guys go on. You know, the original show is very neo-noir, is very like hard-boiled detective story too, and leaning on like a lot of Western cinema. It just looked cool. It didn't sound like anything or look like any other anime series ever made. This new one just feels like they're trying really hard to copy a lot of that. So it has some good actors. Like, I love John Cho, and John Cho is a surprisingly... He sort of like is wearing Spike Spiegel, you know, the main character. He's wearing Spike Spiegel's suit and skin a little bit. I don't know. Like, he's trying to inhabit the vibe of Spike Spiegel. I don't think he quite gets there. But Daniela Pineda, who plays Faye Valentine, is really good in this. I like a lot of the cast. Mustafa Shakir plays Jet Black, who's Spike's partner. This show kind of both tries to really hard to copy a lot of what the original did, but also shift mm-hmm. the characters in new ways and do some new things, including like with Vicious, the main villain of the series. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. I think as a fan of the series, it is a disappointment. I don't know why it really exists. But if I wasn't as beholden to the anime and I was just looking at this as like a here's a fun sci-fi show on Netflix, I guess. Turn off your brain. Right. Turn off your brain. That seems like the Netflix motto at this point.
Recommendations, yeah.
If you do a little of that, it is kind of enjoyable. I like the characters. You know, I like the world and the banter they all have with each other. It's just, it's not Cowboy Bebop. Maybe this thing just shouldn't exist. So I'd love to hear what listeners think, and I'll be working on probably a piece around this for next week. I just got the screeners a little late. But reviews are out now. Certainly mixed from what I've seen. I know people who really like the anime just discount this entirely. And people who are just coming into this universe for the first time are like, hey, there's some fun stuff here. I think there are some fun things here. I just wish, I don't know, maybe if it was better written. And maybe if it had a bigger budget too. Because the look of this show is almost like a cheap Sin City type of look at certain points. And I'm all good with digital backgrounds. But maybe make your sets a little better. Make your like environments look a little better. Aww. I don't know. Work on the action more. I wanted the show to succeed. I want nothing but the best for John Cho and pretty much his entire cast. I don't think it quite gets
and the corgi.
There. Corgi's good. Everybody wants a corgi. The corgi's very good. One character too, like Ed from the original anime series, who's basically a fan favorite, is not in the show at all. And I think that's going to annoy a lot of people as well. So, hey, they tried. I think they mostly failed, but I'd love to hear what other people think about this.
Speaking of Netflix shows, by the way, mm-hmm. there was a thing you recommended last week, Arcane, right? I started watching
yes.
it. I think Arcane 2, by the way, is what has still got new episodes coming every
yeah.
week.
I think
less,
they just dropped the second wave of episodes, and I think the third will be coming.
I saw those,
next, yeah.
yeah. it took a little while for me because, like, at the start, the Jinx character is, like, they're all in their, like, youth, right? They're teenagers or kids, yeah, in Jinx's case. Yeah, but then when they finally grow up, like, Jinx has this, like, they really captured her Harley Quinn vibe, mm-hmm, in this. And it's really cool because, I mean, I was just talking to Jess and, you know, from earlier in this episode on the podcast about this, because both of us play League a little bit. She plays more than I do. Anyway, uh-huh, Jinx, like, when you're playing as Jinx as a character, like, you already get the little, like, maniacal laughter sort of bits in the gameplay. And, like, they do a really good job of, like, introducing those little, like, moments where you can tell Jinx is about to, like, go into her mania, like the laughing, the very Harley Quinn craziness.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. She does feel like Harley Quinn meets the Joker at certain points. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. With guns or bombs. And she, I mean, her character is great. You expect that. But, like, there's also the other characters in there that were League characters, that League champions that I didn't know. And I was, like, watching, uh-huh, right? Not expecting, uh-huh, other. And then, no, they all pop up. I'm just like, oh, someone, like, says the word crank a lot of times, mm-hmm, as a character. And I was like, oh, my God, does he become Blitzcrank? Like, what's, uh-huh, going on?
You know what? Hey, that sounds like, and I talked about why I liked Arcane so much. That is a good adaptation. Right. It gives you the things you love and maybe gives you a new window into those characters and that world.
Right.
It's perfectly enjoyable to me as somebody who doesn't even like League. But I really wish Cowboy Bebop did that. You know, you got to come in at an angle. I don't know if you saw HBO's Watchmen, Trillin, but Watchmen, which did almost an impossible thing of being a sequel to one of the most widely respected, you know, graphic novels ever made. How do you do that? That show was kind of impossible too. I think that'll be my hook for however I write about Cowboy Bebop. Should have been more like Watchmen, but I'm glad you're enjoying it. Arcane's really, really cool.
My chiropractor also enjoys it. I was just like, okay, a lot of people really like this show. This is good. Interesting. All right,
cool. It's good. Yeah. Good animation too. Like, I'd love to see, like, new animated shows that really go hard on animation quality, because I feel like, did you watch Invincible on Amazon?
Yes, I watched parts of it for my interview with Robert.
Right.
Our best friend, Robert.
But that show, I thought it was a fun show. Good characters. Probably the worst animation I've ever seen in, like, a new series, you know? Whereas, mm-hmm, Arcane just looks fantastic and fluid, and there's just so much going on. So, yeah, dig it.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and chatting about movies at the Filmcast Podcast. Check out our new intro music there, by the way. We've got somebody from The Midnight who gave us a custom intro theme. It's really cool.
If you want to send me gifs of Harry Shum Jr., I'm on Twitter at Sherlyn Low. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month the focus is on industrial automation. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.
Yes, because I've been crop dusting this whole time, just so you know.